Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Cycle Tricks Podcast, sponsored by BikeList.com. If you got an old bike or some old parts, or maybe you got some NOS parts sitting around in a box, you want to get some money, get them on BikeList.com. People from around the world, check it out, their website, adding new stuff daily, BikeList.com. Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Cycle Tricks Podcast, episode 102. We're here in Northern California with Mike Stewart, myself, Bo Grant, Dave Dalton, who is actually in Tahoe right now, just got done with a big event. And we got a special episode today because we're heading off to Europe pretty soon, and we're not sure this might be the last episode, right, Mike? It could be. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah. Hopefully we make it. Hopefully we make it back, everybody.
The Col du Tourmalet might be taking us down. We don't know. We'll see what happens. That's not a good way to start the podcast. Is it?
Forever the optimist, Bo. Way to go.
But, a big event is not only our big event, but a really big event is coming up this next week, June 9th, the Tour Divide starts in Banff, Canada, and races through to Mexico. We've already talked to John and Mira a little bit about it, but today we got Marie Soleil Blay coming on the show from Colorado. Welcome and thanks for coming to the Cycle Tricks Podcast.
Thank you for having me. I'm in Colorado right now, but I'm Canadian, so I'm from Canada.
Okay. So are you living in Colorado? Oh, no, you're visiting friends.
No, yeah, I was just staying with friends for a few weeks to help acclimate with the altitude because Eastern Canada is very, like, I come from sea level, so that's always a big gap. When you, like, even Banff is 4,000 feet, but then you climb up to like 9,000 and 10,000. So I've been staying at near Denver at 6,000 feet for a few weeks. Hopefully that will help. We'll see.
Okay. So where is home?
In Bromont, just an hour east of Montreal. I would say because I'm not there very often the last few years. Likely. I've been pretty much couch surfing and a bit out of the place, but Eastern, like Quebec, Canada.
So you gotta be, oh wait, so are you a Montreal Canadiens fan?
You mean the hockey team?
Oh, yes. You mean the hockey team?
Well, so I played hockey for like 20 years. Hockey was like, I even have my hockey number tattooed. And that's the 74 in my Instagram. It comes from hockey, but it's like right now, like the last 10 years I've been in cycling. So hockey is like so far back. So I don't even remember that. But yes and no, because that's the men team. And like, how about women's hockey?
Oh,
and,
yeah.
There's always this balance of like, the more like, we talk about the men team, like the less we give visibility to the women. So like, yes and no, but of course, okay.
Team Canada and Team USA, legendary battles, the ladies hockey games.
I think we won a little bit more, didn't we?
I think so.
As you should.
And it's so crazy because like when I grew up, I played professional a few games in hockey and like, the best hockey players in the world are in Montreal. So like, I didn't have to fly or anything. So moving over to cycling, it was so different because then you had to fly everywhere. Like it's a lot harder to break through in a sport that isn't in your home. Like it's not a 15-minute drive. It's like a 10-hour flight.
Yeah. So how did you get started with cycling?
I guess cycling has always been like my true passion. From I was a kid and I would spend my days on the bike. Like as a teenager, I had this mountain bike, like hardtail, like very low entry bike. And I would do like 100K, like 60, 70 miles. I would just ride all day. And then I started doing these like kind of overnight trip at a friend. And like 16 years old, I did this 450 kilometers. That would be like 300 something miles. trip in 3 days,
yeah.
staying like at my brother and then just kind of not camping, but like I love to ride and go far and see the road. Like I was collecting road maps and like drawing routes and like, so that was like just like a true passion. But I didn't know anybody in cycling. I didn't know cycling as a sport. So it's only like later, like after being done with hockey at university, that I was like, well, somebody told me that I should try racing because it looks like I could be maybe able to do something because I loved it so much. And it was like, you'd be traveling everywhere. And I was like, are you out of your mind? Like, I'm never going to be like that good. But, and yeah, so I did a bit of research, like how do you get on a cycling team? This was such a new world. And I joined like a little club and then quickly like, where's the next race? Like, how do I get better? Like asking questions. And yeah, didn't take very, I mean, the learning curve was kind of still long, but I was just always looking to climb up the wreck. So that's how I made it up somewhere.
Yeah.
That sounds like everybody's story, right? We all started somewhere with like this janky bike or somebody that's showing us the rope that we're like thinking that they're, oh my God, these guys are really good. And then you start dressing like them and you find out don't wear jeans, wear cycling shorts or just the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, yes and no, because I feel like at least for in Quebec, I feel like I see a lot of riders that were early, like picked on early on. There's a lot of programs for U23. And when I started, like I was 24. So like I never had any of these help, never had like these development training camp or like with the federation. So I didn't go through kind of that path. It was more like you said, like, don't do that, dude. Like just learning.
No, but, you know, it's interesting that you say that. I mean, maybe a little too philosophical here, but, you know, what you just said about, let's not talk about, the more we talk about men's sports, the less we talk about women's. And it's interesting because as a kid, I love to ride my bike as well. But people only talked about baseball, basketball, football. I didn't even know there was a world of youth cycling, right? So there wasn't that kind of exposure. And I was the same way. Spent hours every day on my 10 speed, you know, with drop handlebars. I thought it was so cool, but there was nowhere to go with it. So I just kind of, you know, you just stopped it. I didn't pick it up until, you know, went late in life. And it's a shame that there's not more exposure to that stuff, alternative sports than there is. And it's happening a little bit now, but it's just unfortunate.
It's happening with the internet. There's more channels. Yeah. So we get to see, if you want to see it, there's more ways, but it's still not mainstream on like the big ESPN, you know,
right?
Or in high schools, or, you know, there's some mountain bike teams, but in high schools and even around here, the big youth development program, TNA Duro, I think they folded. I don't think they exist anymore, you know, which is a shame.
Yeah,
are they doing high school MTB racing in Canada? Do you know?
If they're doing what kind of racing?
Here in NorCal, it started in Northern California. They have, it's called NICA, but they have high school racing clubs. So the school, somebody from the school can start a cycling club, and then they race in these NICA events that are now all over the country. But it originally started in Berkeley. I was just curious if there was something similar in Canada.
So.
It's mountain biking.
Nowhere. It's
yeah,
I don't even know what are the options for kids because I just picked it up later. I know there's like, so now I live in Bromont and it's like the little cycling hub, and they have like cycling summer camps, and like the nearby schools will go to the facilities. Like there's a pump track and the velodrome and the mountain bike trail. So I know that nearby schools in that area get to try cycling, but I don't think it's nowhere near the US and nowhere near what we see in Europe. Like, it's funny because the like when comparing hockey to cycling, I grew up in hockey just like they grew up in cycling in Europe. And when I went over there, like the culture is so well, my parents never like wanted me to become an NHL player, obviously, but like in Europe, you see the parents like pushing their kids and they see them at the Tour de France. It's the same, but different sport.
It's like same intensity as far as the parents overbearing.
I've seen, yeah. When I raced my first few races in Europe, like not professional, but like the highest level, let's say. And some girls were like 17 years old, and like the parents are screaming, like it's like
Hi. Yeah.
it's
Yeah,
nuts.
we have that here in America too, really bad. Not with cycling, generally speaking, although I'm sure it exists. But all the kids' sports, the parents are, it's like I coached baseball for a lot of years when my kids were growing up, and the kids were great. The kids were awesome, but the parents sometimes, So
you got going as on a pro team on the road, but you hadn't really found the love of doing long distance like bikepacking and all that. Talk a little bit about that transition.
So what's really funny is, even though I love to do these long trips as a teenager, around 16, 17 years old, I was drafted by this pro hockey team, and then it became like I had a shot at the Olympics on the hockey, and so my training on the bike would be like 1 hour. I always loved to use cycling for my cardio, so I did a lot of sprinting for my training because actually I had pain in my knee when running. So I bought a stationary trainer and for hockey. So like my training became really anaerobic focused for like since 16 years old to like 22, 23. So when I started into cycling, I had this really strong anaerobic profile, like a lot more than average, but my endurance sucked. Like after a 1 hour crit, like I'm done. Like and like I remember it was 2016 when I had like a proper road coach, and she gave me 2 times 4 hour ride, like two in a row. I texted her, "This is impossible. Like, are you crazy? Like, dude, like it was extremely hard to go through a 4 hour ride." And but then I knew, like, and then I had cycling teams who told me, like, okay, you can sprint, you can do that, but you still need to get to the end of that race. So then, like, you need to work on your endurance. So this was like what I had to work on, and a little bit like, is it Michael Jordan or who is it? Like he struggled with the 3-point shot, and then he just worked on it
Oh,
until like, what is it?
Shaq. No, I think you're right. I think it was Jordan.
And just like when you take your weakness and you're so tired of hearing that this is your weakness and you just want to stop hearing it, or like I couldn't climb, or like, so then I started like climbing and working my endurance and working my time trial, and like, and it became kind of like, I would say, well, maybe not my strength endurance, but then I kind of became a time trialist after so much focus into it. And but yeah, so then the bikepacking kind of happened during the pandemic when I didn't have a contract. So I was 2 years on the world tour, and then 2021, the team didn't renew the contract. And then I was like, what am I? So I was really struggling with motivation, and I wasn't interested in riding the trainer all winter. Like it was February, I was kind of sick of the trainer with nothing in front of you. I've done two world championships. I'm on the trainer. I'm like 30, 31 years old. Like, what is the purpose of all this? Like massive questioning. And Cycling Canada hired this new coach. Dan, he saved my career. So he sent me sent me a sheet with questions to help me kind of find my purpose in cycling. And it just makes me emotional because he definitely helped me find my way into cycling. It was like one of the questions on that sheet was, at the end of the year, I want to be able to say that. And it was like, I don't want to be able to say that I went through a winter on the trainer. Like, that's right. Not what I want to remember in my life. And it was just like, I need to do something that I want to remember. I want to do something that I'm going to be proud that, like, that will make me grow. That will, like, and so kind of in that same moment, this documentary came on the Tour Divide. It was the documentary with Lyle Wilcox on the 2019 Tour Divide, this like beautiful video. And I had never heard of the Tour Divide. I had never heard of bikepacking or maybe, but it didn't sound like it was for me because bikepacking, like I was this very rigid athlete. I need to sleep in the bed. I need to eat right. You know, I was still chasing the Olympics in my head. So this didn't, but then the way that she approached it when she like talked about the numbers and it's a race and like that aspect, I was like, the physical challenge attracted me very much. And all of the what it comes with it, like having to camp riding at night, all of the, that's like really kind of different from cycling. But I was like, what if I put myself through that, like I would come out of it so much more resilient. Like if I'm able to sleep on the side of the road, then I can sleep in any freaking hotel room and any like conditions. And so it just sparked that curiosity. So then like so much that I told my coach, I want to do a bikepacking trip for training. And I kind of I booked a flight ticket. 3 weeks later, I flew to Las Vegas to do this route, which was actually impossible. So I had to, because I didn't know that off-road altitude, there was snow. And so I had to like completely kind of improvise. But that's how I kind of went into bikepacking. And that trip was so life-changing because I realized very early on in my trip, when I started improvising my route, I would get to like a town and then plan the next sort of 2 or 3 days. And then like just 2 weeks later, I was like picking the hardest route, trying to find the highest mountain, and then I was like, why am I making my life so difficult? It's like, there's nobody watching. I have all the options. I have all the choices. It's just me. And in that situation, what I'm choosing to do is the most difficult things because I love how it makes me feel. And I want to see the view on the top of that mountain. And so I was like, all this time that, because in the later year of my career, it was really very frustrating. The politics, they're like, so like life is always difficult. And then I was kind of blaming cycling for being hard. But then I was like, wait a second. Cycling isn't hard. You're making your life hard by trying to accomplish the hardest thing. Right. So that's like, why don't you like own responsibility for the struggle that you're in and just like embrace it because you're creating it. And so like that was such a big mindset shift.
Yeah.
And then so the Tour Divide. So I had in the back of my mind of doing a Tour Divide. It was just overlapping with nationals. So then I was like, when I don't want to do nationals, then maybe I'll do the Tour Divide. And so last year, I had an opening in my calendar in July. And nationals were in Edmonton. So I flew to Edmonton at the end of June. And then BC Super Week, which was my favorite crit series, was canceled in July. So then I was like, I'm going to be Western Canada. And I have this month. Like, I want to see what the course is like in case I would like to race it. So I just started riding it, and that course is so out of this world. Yeah, it's so the landscape are, I have never seen this. Like when you go off-road, you get to see, you're so much closer to the nature. You get, it's so yeah, big, the impressive, almost like intimidating. You're, and I just loved it so much that when my director in Europe was like, we have a race for you at the end of July. Do you want to come? And I was like, well, maybe I'll skip it. I'm fine. I'm fine here. So then
Wow.
actually I didn't return to Europe and I finished the course. And then I was like, well, like, what's the point of going after the Olympics is if what I truly want is just to push myself to ride my bike to see places. I don't need to freaking deal with the hassle of politics and trying to hit the points that I need. And it's so stressful because everything, all the stars need to be aligned. And then you put everything, you sacrifice everything, and it might not happen where when you can just grab your bike and go and like see incredible thing, live incredible things, you know, without all that process.
It's like you're taking control of the whole situation, right? You're not relying on a team or someone to sign
Yeah, I
off
love
on
it
you.
so much.
So does that mean does that mean pro cycling is behind you and this is you're going to be your focus on these type of events, or this is get this out of my system and see what happens?
Well, I kind of,
I don't think it's
well,
going to get out of
actually.
her system. She sounds like she's got the. I think it felt like to me during her description of all that you're like in a happy place. And I see your video that you sent us, and the smile on your face while you're riding out there on those trails. There's a joy that you are probably weren't totally missing from the European thing.
I think I'm not necessarily fixed on one position because that's the point of bikepacking is like is letting go of this path in front of me and just going kind of with the flow. But I'll say that last fall I was so there's a new velodrome in Bromont. That's kind of the reason why I moved to Bromont was to be all settled to go back to track cycling because this was kind of my first love in cycling. I wanted to go for the team pursuit. So I was training for nationals, track nationals, when I had a big crash and torn my ligament in my shoulder, my AC something. That was in November. So that took a good 3 months. So I was out for nationals. Therefore, I didn't meet the criteria for the funding. And so, and I was just removed from the funding on the road side. So then I was like, this is getting, this is, so it kind of pushed me to doing the Tour Divide and kind of, taking a break of that, pro cycling world, but it like, I might come back to it. Like I wanted to do the Divide, but like, I don't have any plans of like, doing this, you know, it's not necessarily a focus. It's something I want to do, and we'll see. Me, like, I have no idea how it's gonna go. I've never went into sleep deprivation. I might be very bad. I don't know, but it doesn't matter because, like, I'm really not looking after results. I'm looking after doing the best that I can do, and this is what brings joy. And you don't need to be good to do that. You just need to go out there and do your best.
So it's interesting, and I feel bad because I'm sure we've talked about this on, and so our listeners will look at this and there goes, oh, there goes Dave again. But I've kind of the pandemic took me out of the road racing scene here. And look, it's nothing on the scale of what you go through, right, or went through. But I guess coming out of it, I start to think about like even a recreational fast ride on Saturday, I start thinking about Thursday night. Like, have I eaten right? Have I slept right? This is a it's a group amateur ride. And like it got to the point where my wife would say, "Do you want to go out for Mexican food?" She'd go, "Oh, never mind. You're riding on Saturday, right?" So,
it's in
and
your
that's,
blood.
and then that's when I kind of, and Michael relate to this in Bo, is when I found gravel riding. It's like I sign up, and yes, it's a race, but I'm just going to see if I can do it. And if I get a good result, it's great. If I don't, I had
Doesn't
fun
matter.
and I pushed myself to a limit, right? I pushed myself to a limit that I didn't think I could do. And that's kind of what the appeal is. And it's not worried about all that other shit. It's just doing the best I can do.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm glad that I raced all these years and I've won and lost enough time that eventually you build enough confidence that you know that your value is not your results. And then once you make that clear understanding, it's so much more fun than going after a race. And I saw it in time trials. It's like when you do a time trial, your level of satisfaction is not on your result. Is did I give the best that I could? Did I left it all out there? That's like the pure, like I came second twice in the time trial at Nationals. Like, sure, bittersweet, but like the difference between, man, that was a good ride, and like and or how frustrating it is, it's being able to execute it or not. And so like results is like irrelevant.
Yeah.
Well,
well, the
I'll
result
just
was pretty good, though. I mean, second place, yeah, pretty
yeah.
amazing. You know,
I
that's a
mean,
great
sure,
result.
national champion would have been maybe not irrelevant, but yeah, I mean, and actually that race was also c contributed to me kind of stepping out because it was my third podium and didn't get the national champ. And but not just that, because there was maybe $20,000 of equipment difference between. Yeah. And then you're like, well, I'm tired of being always limited by the money and by the support. And what I love about the Tour Divide is this is self-supported. Nobody gets special treatment. Nobody get, you know, like we all get to deal with the exact same things. And I love that because that was such a source of frustration in cycling, this inequality of resource and support. Like I have to like drag my bike at the airport. I need to rent a car. I need to like, I always had to like kind of do everything myself, and that's, and then not having the right wheel, and then, oh, I didn't have a skin suit, and then, oh, like it's like coming nationals without a proper skin suit, like, and then, oh, you're second behind Paula Findlay, like a world champion triathlete. Oh, okay. Well, that's fine. You know what? Yeah.
It is there is a big disparity, right, with the people that have that level of support. And if you don't, I had a buddy of mine. He was trying to do UCI World Cup downhill as an independent, and so like he lived in Santa Cruz. He would fly to like Leo Gang and just everything. He had to figure out like all the logistics, everything. And then he finally gets to the event, and then he does one run in the pouring rain, and then his everything's wet. And then the factory people they have fresh suits for every lap that they're testing. They get a fresh bike on every run, and so it just becomes really there's you can only control what you can control, and then there's these other factors that as an
And
independent.
then like at some point, and I would be like, in the moment I was like, well, you just do your best and that's fine. And I did have moments like when I raced at the World Championship with the national team, we had a lot of support. Like it wasn't always like that, but yeah, it's then that was just one more thing that when I went bikepacking, I didn't have this frustration. And I love that. I love that the culture of bikepacking racing is like no help at all. Like everybody's the same. Like I love it.
So how do, okay, so I will, because I want to hear more about this, and I think which is great because it's fascinating past stuff. now you're going to do this divide, right?
Yeah.
What do you think? How long do you think it will take you to finish?
Ballpark. I have no idea. Surprise.
Okay. What's the longest ride that you've done then? Like, how do you try? I don't know. Like, there's all these books on how to run a marathon and never run a marathon. I don't know that there's a book on how to ride 400 kilometers but never ride 400. Yeah.
4,000.
Yeah. 4,000 kilometers. I don't think, you know, how do you ride 4,000 kilometers but never ride 4,000 kilometers?
Yeah. And I'm really excited to see what's going to happen. And that's why, like the coach that I had and Dan, he really helped me to kind of believe in myself. And there's some things that only happen in a race situation. And I was these, like, you can see I'm very emotional. I'm a very emotional rider, and emotion can do so much, like, strong things. So there's some things that I can do in a race that I can never do in training. Like, I was never really good in training. Like, even though, I mean, I train really hard, but in racing, I just turn into an animal. But that was like, road racing. We'll see. Because like, obviously sleep deprivation is another thing. And endurance was not like my natural ability. So last year I've done the course of the Tour Divide by myself, because I was really intimidated by the course and I just wanted to see, because my skills, I had to walk maybe the distance of a marathon because all of the trails were too hard for me. Yeah. So that might slow me down. So last year my longest ride was about 220 kilometers. That's maybe just over 120 miles. Does that 120 miles? I don't know. Yeah. Not 300 miles. Like, so I have no idea how I could do that. Like, for 20 days or something. So, on paper, it's, to this day, it's impossible. I have never done something close to, like, last year, I've done it in 28 days. And that was 10 hours a day. It was really hard. So it seems completely impossible. But I just have in the back of my mind this idea that sometimes you can do things that you can't do on paper. So, and that's why I want to do it in a race, because we'll see. I'm going to do the, and I don't want to stick on a number. I don't have any goals. And the purpose of that is just to, because if you say, okay, I want to ride 200K or 120 miles a day, then when you reach that limit, it's like, then you feel satisfied so instead, if I don't have any numbers, and that's kind of it's the mindset test. This is what I've talked in the video. It's, I want to see if I can just really tune into myself and listen to my body and go until he really wants to sleep. I mean, of course he's going to ask for sleep and then like, I'm going to try to push it, but like really tune into my body and let it do the best that it possibly can, and just get my mind out of the way of my body executing, because more often than not, the mind is the body is capable of so much. You just need to step out of the way. So that's going to be my goal is, just like a time trial, just do the best that I can and just live it.
So this is like your philosophy you gained from the book, How Bad Do You Want It, right? You turn everything off and just do it.
Yeah. That book was like, every chapter would talk about a different ways that it was like a real case scenario of performances that, like real life performance that were not supposed to happen, but that happened because of some kind of mental work. And and the chapter that really stood out for me was the one about reference, where when we know something, let's say after 4 hours I'm tired, then because you know this, then it's actually limiting you. Instead of if you've never picked up a bike and you have no idea, then you just go ride, maybe you would go ride like longer. So the information that we have is kind of limiting. And that's why I'm so against riding with numbers. And that's what I'm going to do for the Tour Divide. I'm going to remove the timer on my Garmin. It's just kilometers to, because I still need to make decisions with food and resupply. But I don't want to see how much I've been riding. I don't want to know. So I'm just
right.
Gonna,
like, soak it all in, live in the moment.
Yeah.
How many times have you've been riding and you look down at your power meter and you go, I can't sustain this. I can't sustain this, right? Or you look at this, then the average speed and you go, I'm going to blow up. And you really don't know but you think so because you see it. Yeah.
There's two things that happen when you have numbers on your screen. One, you are making judgments. So you're like talking, you have this discussion and you're not paying attention to your body. And then second is you're going to make a decision based on that. It's like, oh, it's really high, I should back off. Or like, oh, I'm doing really good, I should like ease up. Or sorry, the opposite of like, shit, I'm not doing really well. And then it's just negative. I'm not doing well. And removing the numbers, that's what so in this little video, I talk about after reading that book about reference, I decided to do a blind test, to do a 20-minute test without any numbers. And I increased my 20-minute power by 18%. I couldn't believe this, that I had this potential in me. And I was like, all I had. But the fact that I didn't have number allowed me to really tune into myself. That's number one. There's no judgment. And then second is you're not limited by the numbers that you're seeing. And you can really, so from there, like I would, so sometimes I would have a screen with my numbers and a screen without numbers. And I kind of played back and forth, or I would use power for like analysis. But doing, let's say, okay, 5 minute under threshold, and then 5 minute threshold, 5 minute over threshold, do it all blind. You really get to know what is your threshold. You get to sense it. So when you get to time trial, I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't need power. And then I can look at the road. I can really focus on my breathing. And it's so quiet. You don't have this, oh, I'm doing well. Oh, no, I'm not doing well. Or
the mental masturbation you go through, right? Going yes, no.
And so, that's how, like, it's so hard when you have this judgment with your numbers. It's when you're stuck in that conversation. That's like I love this quote: tension is created when we wish things to be different. So when you look at your numbers and you want the numbers to be different, there is so much resistance.
Yeah.
And this is suffering. This, that gap, this is suffering. And so as soon as you doesn't mind what it is, and the easiest thing is just to remove the number, this way you don't have to fight it, then there's no more suffering. Then you're right here. Then it doesn't matter. You just do your best. And like, once you get that, I didn't suffer as much in my time trial, and it's so much easier. And when it's easier, when your mind is at ease, then you can just push through so much easier. Like my last, since 2017, I love time trials. It's not even like hard. I mean, it's hard physically, but you're not like fighting. Even on the trainer, sometimes if I have, I don't know, 3 times or 8 times, 2 minutes. So like you do the first one, it hurts. And then the second one, and then you're like, shit. But like the only way to go through it is like, turn off your mind. Just execute and like, whatever. You just do it without fighting. Like it's burning and you're like, yeah, it burns. Yeah, it's fine.
Right.
Like,
yep.
Instead of, you just change what you say. If you like truly embrace it, truly let it be, like let it suck. It sucks. It's going to suck for the next hour. This is how it is. And when you really get in that moment and you stop looking for being done in 35 seconds, oh, so much easier. Then you do it.
Yeah.
They call that embrace the suck. They use it in the military, talk about that. And you can put that, it doesn't have to be sport related. It could be a sad event or a stressful event or a job interview, whatever. You just say before you go do it, this is going to suck, deal. And then somehow, some way, it seems it's worked for me, I tell you.
Yeah. It's easier than resisting it, than wanting it to be done and like, I want to be out of here. Resistance.
Yeah, resistance. That's a great word for it.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to go too. Go ahead, Dave.
I'm on my phone here, and that's why I couldn't. When she asked about kilometers, I couldn't hit the calculator, and I also can't see time here. So how are we doing? Because I'm just getting loaded here, fired up with questions. So where are we on time?
Probably about 7:15. Yeah, it's 7:15. Okay. I wanted to get into. We've talked. A lot of people out there don't even know about the Tour Divide a little bit everybody's starting to become more aware of bikepacking. I know that during the pandemic, I was watching Ryan Van Duzer's videos of bikepacking the world. And that's where he met John and Mira, who are going to be the first dog packing team that are going to be at the race with you. They're from Canada as well. They're from they're from the Banff area.
Yeah.
And so we've had John on the podcast. We've talked a lot about documenting and camping and all that, but let's talk about the camping part of bikepacking, because you're from Montreal. There's, I don't know how much camping you did as a youth, but I tell you.
Yeah. And like, I didn't grow up in an outdoor family at all. We grew up in ice hockey, you know, like typical Quebec. And, when I watched that video and then like you could see Lyle sleeping in a like bag and I was like, wait, what? And but like, of course, so then I made some research and my sister had a tent, like a proper tent, so I borrowed her tent for my first trip. And my like I bought some cheap bags on Amazon. It was actually and then I was so scared. I was like, how can I do a month without my laptop? So I was carrying my laptop. My bike weighed like 100 pounds. It was nuts. But my camping was more like proper, because then I watched a ton of YouTube videos. So my second trip was in a lighter tent. My bike was like 70 pounds, and then I rode across Europe in a bivy for the first time. But then that was easy, because in Europe there's a lot of these hostels, so then when it was raining I would do the hostel.
Do you like camping? Do you like being out there? Some people, I get the heebie-jeebies around critters, and I've done it one time and I had a horrible night with sounds around my tent.
Well, sometimes it's really nice, sometimes it's hard. Now I bring earplugs and mask. It's like, there's going to be noise. I don't want to know. I mean, I was really confident that there was no problem in your, like, if you don't eat in your camp area.
Right.
Until I heard somebody was eaten by a bear in their tent. Yes. So, wait.
Yeah, that was about 6 months ago.
Okay, let's talk about, I want to touch on fear, because I have a lot of fear and I'm sure a lot of people do. And in pro cycling, I went through, I actually worked with a psychologist to help me overcome fear. And I have different tricks for different situations. First one, I will call it the reality check. Fear is an emotion that comes from our thoughts. And the brain doesn't make the difference if it's a real thought or if it's imagination thought. And so fear can often come from our imagination. Like you hear a sound, it might be this, might be that. And so when you catch yourself into an imaginary scenario, bring back your attention to what is the reality. Like, there is nothing. There's nothing around. Like, everything is fine. In pro cycling, I would come around this bend, like we go really fast, and I'm like, oh, what if this girl slide out, and then this she goes over, and then I just go, and then I'll come off the like you. So as soon as you catch yourself into this imagination, it's like, oh, like wait, everybody, all the tires are on the road, everybody's going around this corner, like so, reality check. Second, fear management. It's going to be to accept the risk. It's like everything in life has risk, and there's some things that you're not willing to do, but then you have to ask yourself, do you want to live your life not doing this? And so it's like on the start line of the world championship, there's this big descent that I don't want to do, but do I want to live my life without racing the world championship? No. So then you accept the risk, and you know that there is some good risk that I fall and that I get hurt, let's say. But the risk that there is like lifelong consequences, maybe not so much. And the risk that I die, like very, very little. So you kind of evaluate the risk before you do something, and you're like, okay, what are the chances that I get eaten by a bear? It's like very, 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 very low. What are the chances that I get to see a bear that maybe I have to spray him, and maybe I get really stressed? Like that very might happen. But do you want to live your life without experiencing the divide? That's up to you to decide. And I actually use that very often while writing. It's like I get scared about something, and it's like, well, I accepted the risk. Like I was meant to be here, and if this is what, if a bear is going to come and eat me, well, I'm meant to be here. And it's just having like this a little bit of faith.
Yeah.
That's kind of my way when I get overwhelmed with fear, it's like, well, I decided to be here, so let it be. Like,
yeah, that's a good, yeah. I, you know, as a kid, I used to watch those Bigfoot documentaries, and so when I was out on my own, there was probably some little squirrel off in the bush, but in my head, it was Bigfoot coming to get me in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Awesome. Yeah, it is scary. And I camped, I don't know, 50 times, maybe a little bit more. I mean, not that many times. I think you need some experience, and I'm glad that I've done a few backpacking trips before the Tour Divide, and I'm glad that I've done the route because I'm still learning a lot. And I'm still like, and I still sometimes I pick the wrong spot, and I'm like, yeah, that was not the best spot. But still learning, and so I still get very nervous. Like, so I finished my trip on the Tour Divide last year at the end of July. And then went to track cycling, and then winter in Canada, and then kind of moved back here. So I only camped for the first time after that in Arizona in April. And I got all nervous because it's been like 8 months. And yeah, it is a bit nerve-wracking to outside. But then you get to see the sunset and sunrise, and there's so much that I love. It's so worth it. That I do it anyway, and I think the more you do it, then the more you'll become accustomed to it.
Agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So now that you've got this down a little bit, you went from 100 to 70. So what are you going to be? Your bike will be. So you got food for how many days, and you've got all these other supplies, extra clothes, a tent, et cetera, et cetera. What's your bike going to come in at? Do you think? And how do you live without your laptop?
No extra clothes, no tent, no laptop. I think this is going to be definitely my lightest setup. So
Back up. No tent?
Bivy.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm changing things like trips after trip. I kind of dial. Last year I was at 50 pounds, maybe 47. Including my backpack, including everything I'm wearing, like my shoes, you know.
Wow.
Plus food and water, so maybe like 55 or something. This year, I'm going to pack later today, and I wanted to weigh everything. So I think I'm going to be closer to 40, because this is going to be the first time that I go without a backpack. Because so I'm 5'2", fairly small. So my bike is a small, and my frame pack is a 4-liter frame pack, which is like the smallest frame pack you can get. So when I see a lot of video on YouTube and it's like, oh wow, he can fit everything in that that little space, but then it's like, well, I have like my bike is twice as small, so then I need to be more creative. That's a little issue with women, but I don't know where I was going with that.
We're going
just to the challenge of packing everything. I mean,
oh yeah, the weight.
It's okay. It sounded great. So just keep.
So I think so for food and water. So the way the Tour Divide, there's a fairly easy resupply about every 24 hours. Or I mean, it depends how fast you go and how or how much distance you can cover in a day. So I'm not going to be carrying much. I'm not carrying a stove. I'm gonna be eating like sandwiches and things that are already ready to eat from gas station, from restaurant. That's kind of what I did last year. I was carrying up to 5 liters of water. That was way too much. There's so much water on this course everywhere. And at first, like that was the first time I was filtering water. Lyle is not even filtering her water. Like the water is so crystal clear in the mountains over there. So you can just fill up your bottle. And so I started doing that. I mean, I might filter and I still bring the water purification tab. But so you bring 2 liters of water. I have another bladder there is some section in the desert. But for the most part, very little food, very little water.
What do you mean resupply? What happens there?
We go through towns every 100 miles or so, more or less, 100, 150 miles.
Oh, okay.
There is going to be a gas station, a restaurant. And so I'm never carrying food for more than until the next town.
Yeah. Well, you've touched on so many things, Marie. I mean, from the, not looking at your numbers, embracing the suck, overcoming all these obstacles in the Great Divide. So putting all that together, what do you think is going to be your greatest challenge during this race?
The cold.
Yes.
The cold is a different animal, because when you get cold, then it's really hard to use your head.
Yeah.
And so as strong as I can be in road cycling, I have all of my head. So I don't know what it's going to be when I start losing. and I get cold really easily, like my hands and feet, that can get like painful cold. So from any, like I go for a ride and I'm the first one frozen. So maybe I have a little bit more gear. I actually have more, I have a warmer setup, I think, than I did last year. And the weather doesn't look to be great. So, I'll do my best. I'm properly equipped. And then there are some hotels or places. So I know what to do with the challenge. It's just dealing with it. So I think that's going to be my first barrier.
I think that's interesting. Again, I kind of come back, because I think that's where we had our technical glitch. When you say these resupply, you don't go out ahead of time and put stuff there and it's there. You just happen to get into a town. You can make a decision. I'm going to go get some Twinkies and eat at the gas station, or I'm having a bad day, I'm going to check into a motel. It's just that there are these spots along the road. They're not pre-planned. You're not putting stuff out there to pick up. You're just getting what's in town.
Exactly. I think it's possible to ship things ahead of time to like post office, but that seems like a complicated. There's enough free supply that, yeah, I just walk into a gas station. It's not really great food, yeah, but then it's fast.
And that tour divide has become a, there are towns that nobody will ever go to except for people that are riding the tour divide. And they almost depend on this event for economy.
And I would say beyond the event, they depend on, well, the route.
The route.
So tour divide is before the tour divide, there was the Great Divide mountain bike route. This is the route that was designed, and it's super scenic off-road. So a lot of people come and do this route. And so when we race the Tour Divide, that's just kind of like one little, like a bunch of rider on all starting together. But beyond that date, so last year I rode the course in July, and I would see bike backers. I would like meet two or three a day, and that was in July, like way after the race. So, and the stores, like they see bike backers all day, all summer. So it's beyond.
It's a whole community. It's an interesting part of that Ryan Van Duzer and John's video that I watched 2 or 3 years ago, was watching the relationships that they ended up building with these people that they call trail angels, because they'd be in the middle of nowhere and they'd need something, and somebody'd come out and just nowhere and be like, hey, you know, come stay at my place and I'll feed you and house you. And they're just these amazingly nice people that live along that whole route.
Yeah. And trail angels, that's something I discovered, because in pro cycling, there are no angels. But
devils.
Yeah. You know,
ever since my first bikepacking trip, I couldn't believe, when you're on a bike with all your gear, there's this sense of vulnerability. And I feel like people pick up on that, and I get so much help just by being. I remember I was at the gas station just playing with my bags, and this lady came and just gave me a bar. You'll need that. It's like, when do a stranger just give you a chocolate bar? There's just and I started calling them my angel of the day on my first bikepacking trip, and I was taking notes of them, because every day somebody would kind of save my day or something. There's so much magic that happens once you load up your bike and go out there. It's amazing.
So I know you're not playing it by the numbers, but you mentioned sleep deprivation. Well, first of all, God bless the angels. I mean, it's just proof that there are some good people left in this world, right? We need more people like that. But I know you're not going by the numbers, but let's talk about sleep. You sleep deprivation. Do you have an estimate of how many hours of sleep you'll get a day? Or are you just going to listen to your body and say, I need to sleep, and then get up and go until?
Yeah, I'm strongly against alarm, because I think the body needs to. I only put an alarm maybe when I have an early flight. Well, no, when I have an early flight, sure. But like, and when I drove, so I drove my car from Quebec to Tucson. That was 45 hours. And I kind of did this little, because I have my bed in my car. I could, so I was like, I'm going to drive until I'm tired and see if I can. I tried having caffeine at midnight, and just to see how much I could kind of push my, that was driving. I mean, I never drove while feeling asleep. I was just either driving or sleeping. I just wanted to see. And so I slept maybe 4 hours the first night. I was wrecked. I've never been able to sleep less than 6 hours. I don't think it's going to be. But it doesn't matter what I think. I'm just going to, go by feel, just like in the time trial. You just, I don't know. I'm just going to do my best. I know that, for example, there's this big group ride. Do you know of the shootout in Tucson?
No.
It's like the Saturday morning. There's 100 riders. It's so freaking hard. And it starts so early. And it's just a training ride. And it's cold in the morning. But like, every time I'm in Tucson, I have never skipped it. Like, I'm always able to get up and go when it's go time.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe it's like a surprise. I have no idea, but that's the goal of doing the race. I want to see if I'm able to go into sleep deprivation, because I think it's impossible to do it without the race. You don't do a marathon without the marathon. So it's going to be.
Yeah.
It's like I've never done a marathon and I just sign up and we'll see if I can do it or not. Maybe not. And that's okay if it's not. Like, I still get to ride. Like, if I'm dead last out of 200 riders, it doesn't matter. I want to ride it and do my best. Then the rest. Yeah.
Well, Marie, I got to say, I love your approach to the event, because I think you're entering it with the perfect mindset. You know, just enjoy this experience, give it everything you have, and let the chips fall where they may. I mean, that's how you want to enter something like this, you know.
I'm with you, Mike. I'm sitting here trying to say, okay, now when I write on my social media stuff about why people should listen to this, is it really about the Tour Divide, or is it really about the power of the mind? Because I'm walking away with so much here.
Yeah. And I think that's the message that I want to tell, because I wasn't super gifted athletes. It's, you know, I get zero inspiration from these talented athletes who accomplish, that are able to ride really fast. It's like, okay, well, good for you. Like, how?
Yeah. All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, wow. We are right at 7:40, probably should start to wrap it up. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot more questions that I have, but you've got to get prepared for your race. And
yeah, I have to start packing up, but maybe we can reconnect after the race and yeah. I can tell you if I was able to go into celebration or what happened. My goal is to not break, to stay, just until that question is to be able to find that edge and to stay on that edge, just like in a time trial. Like, it doesn't matter where it is, but to be able to find it and to listen and to kind of find your pace, the fastest pace that you can sustain.
Right. Yeah.
So are we gonna have go ahead.
You answered one of my two questions. Number one, it sounds like after this, because I think we're only starting to scratch the surface here, you would be willing to come back. Number one, I hope the answer is yes. and number two is, unless it's proprietary, are you able to send me those 30 questions that your coach sent you? Because that seemed to evoke some kind of amazing response for you. And I'm definitely...
Yeah, it was not 30, but it was a couple. Yeah, I have this sheet probably somewhere.
Okay, and if you ever get a chance, email it, because it sounds like almost life changing. So that'd be cool.
It was such a great coach, and I'm so grateful. It was Dan. He's been coaching forever. Yeah.
What is Dan's last name?
Brew.
Dan Brew.
Brew. P-R-O-U. Like French, but
well the cycling world has a little debt of gratitude to Dan.
Are we gonna be able to follow you? I know that John and Mira posted that they have a link where it's a little tracker. We're gonna be able to follow you, right?
Yes, so it's all on the same website. It's the trackleaders.com website, and when you go there's gonna be Tour Divide 2023 is listed. You click on there, you see the whole route, you see everybody's dot. So I should be on there from Friday, June 9th. I think it's 7 a.m. I'm not too sure how it starts. It's so weird because I'm used to have like a start time and like you need to show your license.
Yeah.
It's just so like, this is different.
Show up around 7 and ride and we'll
just
kind of wave goodbye.
And then
yeah.
And then, ciao, good luck.
Have fun.
We don't care like what you do.
I'm gonna petition the organizers. See, taking a takeaway from your philosophy here, it shouldn't be track leaders. It should be track participants or track, because everyone's a winner that's doing this thing, right?
Yeah, I mean, I find it is inspiring to see the faster rider, because it just like when I saw Lyle doing the video and doing these records, it's showing me kind of what's possible. It's opening a door of possibility. So I think it's good that, well, track meters, like it gives you the possibility to see not only your friends, but what are the faster riders doing? What is humanly possible? Just like, yeah.
How much do you expect to be able to post, do any kind of social media while you're racing?
So this is because I kind of love doing this interaction on social media. I like to ride by myself, but I like how social media is an easy social kind of. And I did all of this kind of media before the race because I love to race in front of a crowd, and when I did crit racing in the US, I just love that energy. And so I was like, maybe I'll kind of like create this crowd by making noise about it. And in one way, it is creating a little bit of pressure, but I also don't care because I don't mind failing. So there is no failing possible. Like,
right.
If I'm really far in the ranking, it doesn't matter. I think as long as I'm able to push myself. So I really don't care about being, to speak about it and to tell everybody that I'm going to go after it, but like after my best, whatever it is. But this time, for the first time, I'm going to try not to post. We'll see. So all my right. sister-in-law will take over my account and maybe write some updates, but I'm bringing the GoPro. That was really important to me, because also we're not allowed to have a media crew, and I'm never going to have the support to have that, but I want to be able to share that story because I don't come from the outdoor. I don't come from, so I think I have a very different story. I have a lot of fear. I think my story is one that is maybe more relatable than those from the record breakers or something. So I want to be able to share that. And also because you were talking about this guy that you had on the podcast, when I see guys accomplishing things, it doesn't click in my mind that I could possibly do this. But when I saw Lyle, when I see a woman doing something, then it's like, maybe I could do it. So it's really important that we see more women in these videos. So I hope that this video will be just another one. Like, there are many on YouTube, of course, of women doing a big challenge, but it's just one more. And hopefully that will inspire other women to know that they can learn too, that you don't have to, you've never camped, that's fine. Like, you can start and
give it a try. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm going to be self-documenting, but doing a YouTube video after the race. And during the race, I'll have my sister-in-law kind of posting some little bit. I might do some little stories. I don't know. But it's...
Yeah, no pressure. Just do it. If you feel like it, you pull the phone out. And then if you don't, it's the last of your worries.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see with sleep deprivation. Like, it's so easy to be excited and like, I want to do all these things. Mm-hmm. And when you're really crushed.
Right. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. I hear you. Well, hey, finishing up here, we got to go. Our time's just about up here, but we wish you nothing but the best and safe travels and no flats and no mechanicals and all that stuff.
Thank you so much for having me and giving me the opportunity to share my story and hopefully inspire a few people.
For sure. And to your point earlier, we would love to have you on afterwards. I think it would be a great way to kind of close the loop on the whole experience, you know? We'll reach out to you and best of luck. I think you're going to do great. I think you have the right approach. I think that's everything. Yeah.
Thank you. We'll see. I'm excited.
Godspeed.
Yeah.
Oh, and where can they follow you? People can follow you on Instagram.
So I'm at msoleil, S-O-L-E-I-L. I know it's hard for English. Msoleil, B-L-A-I-S, 74.
Yeah.
Written somewhere in the description.
All right.
All right.
Awesome. Thanks for listening, everybody. Appreciate you. Have a good day.
Thank
you. Get out and ride.
See you guys.